This is the Israel Connection on JA Community Radio, broadcasting live on 88 FM and streaming over the internet at j-air.com.au. My name is David Schulberg, bringing you another episode of this weekly radio program that provides analysis and insight with important interviews and discussion about Israel. Former ABC director Joe Gersh has called out the public broadcaster for not examining the current explosion of anti-Semitism in Australia. Gersh affirms that he is a supporter of a strong, independent and impartial ABC. According to Gersh, "It is a matter of deep concern to me as a member of the Jewish community, as a former ABC director and as an Australian citizen that our national broadcaster has not fully understood and dealt with what I believe has reached crisis proportions." I spoke with Joe Gersh earlier this week. I'm speaking today with a former government-appointed non-executive director of the ABC. That is Joe Gersh. Welcome to the show, Joe.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, David.
Joe, you believe that a major issue in the fight against anti-Semitism that we're experiencing in Australia is the ABC. You've been saying that the ABC is part of the problem. Why are you saying that?
Well, I think I need to go a little bit into background.
Sure.
What prompted me to speak out publicly, which is something I didn't do when I was director of the ABC for 5 years, that term having ended in May of last year. The reason I didn't speak out publicly was it's not the practice of the ABC for individual directors to speak. The ABC generally speak, if the directors speak at all, they speak through the chairman, and that was Arta Buttrose during my term. But the events of October the 7th in general and the Josh Frydenberg documentary, which appeared on Sky News in particular, prompted me to ask this question, which was, why did this appear on Sky News, not the ABC? Now, that's not to criticise Sky News at all or Josh. I began by saying kol hakavod to Josh for having done it, and to Sky News and to Shari Markson for having promoted it. But it seemed to me that our public broadcaster, our taxpayer-funded broadcaster, which holds a particular place in the Australian consciousness, had an obligation to speak out about anti-Semitism and failed to do so. And this concerned me as a former director. It concerned me as an Australian citizen. It concerned me as a member of the Jewish community, and I asked the question why, and posed the answer, which was perhaps that the ABC was in fact not part of the solution because it was at least part of the problem, and then spoke in an article in the Jewish News, in the Daily Telegraph, on Shari Markson's program and elsewhere about a couple of examples. The first was that Compass, which is the ABC's signature, a religious affairs program, chose, instead of perhaps tackling the subject of anti-Semitism, instead to run a documentary about a particular anti-Israel advocate, well-known, well-published, who has Jewish parentage, and that seemed to be sufficient for them to give him and his views an airing. And perhaps more egregiously, the global affairs editor of the ABC, John Lyons, who is knowledgeable and experienced journalist, senior journalist, but nonetheless is on the record in a book that he published, which has been spoken about widely, in a monograph that he wrote about the Jewish advocacy organizations themselves, and in an action which he was prominent in within the ABC itself, after the ABC management took it upon themselves to enforce their social media policy in relation to a particular announcer. And understand that the ABC's social media policy must be enforced if the ABC is in fact to have any editorial control at all. If the ABC is very carefully monitoring and holding to editorial standards the work of its journalists in writing and on air, then the whole editorial control process breaks down if those journalists are free to say and do whatever they choose on social media. So it was important for ABC management to enforce its social media policy. John Lyons was prominent in a meeting of 200, it's reported, ABC journalists who met to vote no confidence in the managing director, David Anderson. Now, that's entirely performative. The staff don't choose the managing director. They can't dismiss the managing director. The vote of no confidence has no standing other than in a performative sense. But it was an act of extraordinary, actually, disloyalty to his own management to do that, and indicates a degree of bias that's so profound that makes you ask, how can this person possibly be the principal person responsible for global affairs during a situation like the Israel-Gaza war? So that's the background to what I said and wrote and what's caused me to comment publicly.
Well, I was going to bring up a question which I think you kind of responded to in relation to what you have done. A letter in the Jewish News just last week by Alan Friedman, who's associated with the Australian Jewish Association, he points out that the problems with the anti-Israel bias for the ABC goes way back, and we do know that. It's not just October the 7th, but October the 7th has seen his rise to a new level because of the intensity of the issue. He points out that and says that you didn't really do enough to deal with the problem when you were directly involved. And I think you kind of say that you don't have that leeway when you're on the board to do that. I mean, I guess you could walk out if it was egregious enough, but he says that the standard you walk past is the standard you accept. You don't accept that as fair criticism, I suppose, since you really didn't have a way of dealing with it while you're on the board.
I don't want to respond to that. I mean, he can say what he likes, but the fact is that the ABC is organised on the basis that the editorial content is the purview of management under the control of the editor in chief, who's the managing director. The board does not determine editorial content. If it was so easy, even that great hero of the Jewish people that you just mentioned, who said he's been advocating for 20 years, should have had some results to show for it as well. I'm only being cheeky. I think he and I both understand that this is a complex and layered problem. It's not helpful for one member of the Jewish community to virtually attack another, which, by the way, has been the modus operandi of the AJA for a while, so not unexpected.
Okay. Now, when you were interviewed by Sherry Markson, you were asked about what happened in the ABC boardroom when you sat together with other board members. Now, you mentioned that you had no control over content when you were on the board, but can you say anything at all about what the feeling was like in the boardroom, whether there was any goings-on in terms of the exchange you had with other members of the board that troubled you in any sense?
Well, what happens in the boardroom is confidential, but I can honestly say the subject of Israel and the Middle East, it came up very rarely, and only then when, as is required, the issue of complaints and how they're dealt with came up. There's a whole range of things that are discussed that really have nothing to do with content at all. I was chair of the Sustainability and People Committee, which deals with human resources and which deals with environmental issues. And there's the overall financial governance of the ABC, which is very important. There are many, many issues that affect the ABC and all media organisations currently. But if anybody would like to put the proposition that on the 14th floor at Ultimo, the board gets together and takes decisions that are either pro-Israel or anti-Israel or any other major issue, by the way, not just Israel and the Middle East, it's just not the case. It's just not what the board does. If you ask me what the feeling is like, the board's made up of a number of people. I felt, as a member of the Jewish community, as a lifelong Zionist, very comfortable in their presence. Now, whether I'd feel as comfortable in the presence of some of the people who hold journalistic positions at the ABC is another question. But the board itself, I was very comfortable.
So you're sitting in a board here, which is, in a sense, you're describing it as kind of separate for what is the ABC culture. And this ABC culture, which is kind of permeated by a number of journalists who, in a kind of collective way, are expressing an anti-Israel bias. And although John Lyons is at the helm, there are a number of other journalists that one could say are of a very similar ilk to him, and even perhaps more extreme than him. I can think of Paul Barry, who does Media Watch, who's lately been extremely nasty in some of the remarks that he's been putting onto his program. So what do you say about the concerns that people have about a certain culture that seems to permeate the ABC in terms of the people who are actually operating and dispensing information that the public consumes?
Well, the ABC has an obligation of impartiality. You would ask the question whether it's discharged that obligation when it comes to the coverage of Israel, the Middle East, what's happening in Gaza, etc. People look at it from their own perspective. As a member of the Jewish community, I would share the general view of the Jewish community that the, not everybody, by the way, but that much of the journalism is biased and is anti-Israel. I say much, not all. There are different people within the ABC and different parts of the ABC. So I'm not saying this to either attack or defend, but I've heard many interviews that are just straight. Some of our visitors from overseas and many people who have come have been interviewed. I'll give an example of Ehud Yari being interviewed by Geraldine Deeg, or interviews that Jeremy Liebler have given that I've heard, which were just straight and people got to put their point of view. But often that's not the case. The interviewer is biased or interrupts or diverts the interview into another particular direction. So if you ask me as a member of the Jewish community, overall, and listening to the ABC, am I happy and satisfied with the way in which the issues that are close to our heart have been dealt with? No, I'm not. But there are a couple of things that I'd say about it, because I think we need to equally understand that it is the position of many of the Palestinian advocates who will say with equal vigor that they find that the ABC is entirely biased in favor of Israel, and they can't understand why the ABC has insufficient sympathy for their point of view or for the plight of their brethren. The ABC position on this sometimes is, well, if the Jewish community is upset and the Palestinian community is upset, we've got to kind of got an equal opportunity situation, and that must mean we're doing something right. Don't agree. It's not my position at all. And it's certainly not the position of those who are trying to look at this situation objectively. But nonetheless, we ought to be aware of it. And I've heard that view expressed. It amazes me, but it's been expressed by more than one Palestinian advocate of one kind or another. I guess you've asked me onto your program. I'm happy to be here, and some have criticized me. That's their prerogative. But the question is, what do we do about it now? Or why have I spoken out now? And why is it concerning me now? And the answer to that is that the exponential rise of anti-Semitism in Australia, which can't be denied, the complete lack of inhibition that was previously the case. It wasn't that long ago that demonstrators wouldn't shout abuse at members of the Jewish community. They wouldn't stop a woman in her 80s and call her a Zionist pig as she walks on her way to a demonstration. They wouldn't stop Jewish people from going to a synagogue with a demonstration, and so on and so on and so on. The extent of anti-Semitism that Josh pointed out in his documentary, and that all of our Jewish organizations and advocacy groups, including the AJA, so I don't want to appear to be singling them out for criticism just because they did me. The extent of it is shocking and distressing. My kids' school graffitied. I think, I'm sure you've covered the story of the words that were painted on the Mount Scopus fence. So it's simply almost unfathomable, unrecognisable that this is Australia, the Australia we all grew up in, and would never have expected it to have got to this extent. So it pains me that whatever the position is of some or many at the ABC in relation to Israel, and there are very strong views, I just happen to not agree with them, but there are very strong views held by those who are on the other side of the question as far as we're concerned. Surely, though, they would be shocked and horrified and distressed from their own perspective about, is this the Australia we all want? Is this the Australia that we can...
That we grew up in, that we knew, yeah, in the past.
You know, just what has happened. And the fact that our public broadcaster hasn't found it within itself to schreie gewalt, to just scream and say, sorry, even those who we are with ideologically, we do not accept what's going on in Australia. It should not happen here. It cannot happen here. It's wrong. This upsets me enormously, enormously. Now, the ABC is only part of the problem, and there's plenty of other left-leaning woke press that has plenty to say about this issue as well. And, of course, there's parts of the press that have been very, very good and very supportive. And I shout out to The Australian, which has run with this story consistently and regularly and proudly and bravely. The two are clearly related, but they are separate. It is possible to criticise Israel or the Israeli government and not be anti-Semitic. On the other hand, there are those whose motives are clear. Criticising Israel is not in and of itself anti-Semitic. From the river to the sea is clearly anti-Semitic because it denies the basic rights of the Jewish people, which it accords to everybody else. That's why I've got myself upset, and I know that this upset is felt throughout the Jewish community, and looks to government and to actually all sectors of Australian life, but particularly to leadership. That includes government, includes the opposition, it includes a public broadcaster, it includes all of our media, it includes business leaders, and it includes church leaders and all kinds of people to whom we expect some degree of support. And to some extent, of course, we've received that support. It's not the case that we're standing alone. If we have to, we will. Because we, the Jewish people, together with Israel, are up against a foe which can only see one way, which is the destruction of Israel and with it the Jewish people. We're not going to allow it to happen, nor are we going to simply allow elements of Australian society to behave in a way that we don't accept. One of the things which I said in the Jewish news is that I'm really proud of the way our community has responded, not just the Jewish organisations, the Zionist organisations, which have done a great job, our advocacy organisations. Our rabbis have stood up in a way which has never been the case previously. Our student leadership, again, against very tough odds. And lots of individuals, philanthropists, board members, donors, people who have been doxed and whose good work and goodwill over the years has been rejected or abused. And we've stood up for ourselves. We've stood up for ourselves very well. We're appreciative, I think, of the support that we've had. But in terms of government, all governments, and we've had some fantastic support from, I was, you know, present for the Premier of New South Wales, who's spoken on many occasions wonderfully well. But we're entitled to expect from our government understanding and support at a time of crisis. And we're also entitled to expect it from our public broadcast. And we haven't had it.
I'm speaking with Joe Gershon about the ABC at the moment. Following this interview, for the benefit of my listeners who really want to hear some examples of ABC bias, I'm going to be playing a few excerpts and commenting on what's said, just to highlight some of the particular ways in which the ABC deals out its bias, with particular examples mainly coming from John Lyons, who is the expert in delivery of this sort of material. I want to say that I also went last night to the temple to watch the Josh Frydenberg documentary. I had already seen it before, but I went along again to take my elderly mother, who has not got great vision, so it was a better environment for her to go, and also to have the opportunity to meet Josh and express her views growing up, before she became a Holocaust survivor, growing up in a country where anti-Semitism was on the rise and grew to the proportions that we know were horrendous. And now in her later life, seeing it happen yet again for her in particular, it's very, very troubling. And she spoke to Josh, who appreciated hearing that. And one thing I said to Josh, and you might like to comment on this, is that the ABC has neglected to come back to me on something that I suggested or requested. There's a documentary that is about the Nova Music Festival massacre. And I suggested to the ABC, I also suggested to SBS, that this is a documentary of value. I've interviewed the director and asked that it be considered to be shown on the ABC. I have received no response from either quarter. I would put it out to everybody that what Josh Frydenberg suggested is that when you get to this position, if certain people or departments of the ABC are not coming back to you in a way that you would expect, and you've tried your best to get a response from them, the best thing to do is to send emails directly to David Anderson, the managing director of the ABC, to tell them what your concerns are and expect some action. And I can give you an example of where that actually was, I think, successful. Just only a couple of weeks ago, Patricia Karvelas was on air, and after an interview with one of the members of the Greens that was particularly hard to listen to, I heard her in an interview with Zoe Daniel, where she made a comment that, describing the situation in Gaza, that Israel had murdered 36,000 people, not killed, but murdered. Within a few days, I got an email back from the ABC saying that they realised that this was wrong and it's been corrected. So now anybody who listens to the podcast of that particular episode won't hear her utter those words. But she's been excused because she went through a rather torrid interview, according to the ABC, with the member of the Greens, and that seemed to have an effect upon her where the words slipped out. But to my mind, it seemed to suggest that a number of people at the ABC, even when they are expressing views that are perhaps not that friendly towards Israel, are harbouring views within themselves that are even worse, but they don't put them out. And only in this particular case, it kind of slipped out from her unconscious self and came across, and the ABC had to correct it.
Well, I guess you're making a number of points there. The one is, well, first of all, if you're concerned, you should complain, you should write, and if your complaints aren't dealt with, you should follow it up. So, I mean, there's no doubt about that.
On the other hand, Joe, I've lodged another complaint, which I actually turned into a whole radio program, and I never got a response within the 60 days that's supposed to be the time in which the ABC responds. I then sent it up to ACMA, who didn't want to deal with it, and handballed it back to the ABC. But by that time, I was fed up with the whole matter, and I've given it into the hands of Senator Patterson, James Patterson, and David Coleman, who were sitting in Senate committee. Didn't get brought up, but I believe they still are in a position to put this to the ABC to get some answers as to why they allowed a program that was talking about the economy of Gaza, where they never had mentioned Hamas at all during that whole program, which seemed crazy because, of course, Hamas is a major player in what's happened in Gaza. That's the kind of thing that they've done in a program where I think the presenter really wasn't necessarily anti-Israel, but just let the guest sail on and say whatever she liked.
Well, again, you've raised a number of things. I do think that if you're writing to the ABC and getting no response, that you should write to the managing director. There's also the ombudsman, by the way. You know, I've been to the Nova Festival site. I visited Israel a few weeks ago. Even though the story was well reported here, the emotional impact of being there, it's become a memorial. And, of course, every day there are parents and relatives of those who lost their lives, some of them in the most unbelievable, indescribable way. It's something that you need to do, but it leaves a scar for life. So, yes, there should be whatever documentaries are available should be aired on our public broadcaster. They haven't been. That's not right. In terms of having complaints dealt with, we did try, whilst I was on the board, to improve the complaints procedure by appointing an ombudsman and changing the way in which complaints are dealt with. I'm not on your program to defend the ABC. No, I'm not the complaints department that can deal with you with the matters that you've raised. It does upset me when I hear that complaints are dealt with. They need to be dealt with. There is a procedure for dealing with them. There is a supervising body, ACMA. Generally speaking, what I've heard from the community is that there is possible to get some response, but generally the responses aren't considered to be satisfactory. That's not good. That's not right. And that's not to say that every complaint is necessarily justified or the ABC hasn't got an answer in some cases. The story is, of course, mixed because the same PK, Patricia Karvelas, that you mentioned, I saw on social media in the last few days, ran a program about the Attorney General's review of hate speech that was very favourably reviewed by members of the Jewish community. He thought that the coverage of it by her was fair. You do need to look at the question of media bias with as an objective an eye as you can find. The presenter of Media Watch, who's now finishing up shortly, is the last person I would call objective. I wonder, in fact, whether that program is meant to be taken seriously or as some kind of satire, because this breathless, self-righteous approach of his, I find very hard to take, very hard to watch, so in fact I don't. And I'm not saying that as a former ABC director or even as a member of the Jewish community, just as a consumer of television. I don't think it's a very satisfactory program, or at least I don't think he's a very satisfactory presenter. I'm glad that's coming to an end.
Yes, I think his arrogance is just extraordinary. You can just feel it vibrating through the screen. We've only got a few minutes, Joe. I just want you to tell us, to sum up, how is the ABC going to be reformed? There have been changes over time where the ombudsman was appointed. We had new people come in that promised change, but the ABC still seems to have this endemic problem. Can we really reform the ABC, and how do you suggest that might happen?
Well, there is a new chair, and the new chair has come out strongly to say that if you want to be an advocate, that's your right, but you can't both be an advocate and an ABC journalist who's bound to be impartial. How he goes about bringing that to be the case, it is a pretty tough ask. I don't want to conclude this interview with you by joining in with those who want to see the ABC defunded or privatised or closed in one way or another. I'm not one of those. Remember, the ABC does a great deal outside of current affairs in the areas of drama, in the areas of kids, for music, for the arts, in rural and regional areas, in all kinds of ways. And I know the critics hate when I say this, but this is not my opinion. This is the results of polling, is the most trusted news organization in the country. Now, that may, you know, come as a surprise to some in the Jewish community, find the coverage unacceptable. But nonetheless, that is the result of consistent polling. So we have an obligation to support the ABC as a major cultural institution in the country, but to continuously encourage it to be impartial. But in the case of anti-Semitism, to be empathetic to the situation of our community, which is, as I said, different from trying to call the Middle East. There is no case for anti-Semitism. You don't need to be impartial in the face of anti-Semitism. It's unacceptable under any circumstances and not part of anything which government, opposition, media, church, universities ought to be part of, believe in, accept under any circumstances. So that's what we need to expect from our ABC and from all of the other instrumentalities of public opinion formation that I've referred to. On the question of the Middle East, again, we need a disparity of voices. We can't expect that every voice that is heard is necessarily going to say what we want to hear or what we believe in or what we believe to be true and correct. But we do need to make sure that our voices are heard, and when they're not, insist. But I don't know that I'm the expert on what the solution is to this particular problem, other than to say to those who are continuously monitoring, advocating, participating, insisting, watching, that they should continue to do so. We continue to stand up for ourselves in this and in all other walks of life. That's the only advice
I can give. Being one of those, Joe, I'll be suffering day after day as I tune into the ABC and listen to more examples of this kind of bias that makes your stomach churn every now and then. So I'll be there. And I thank you very much for talking to us on the Israel Connection, Joe.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
You've been listening to former ABC Director Joe Gersh, who has called out the ABC for not giving proper attention to the current explosion of anti-Semitism in Australia. I indicated during my interview with Joe Gersh that I would play a few examples of the kind of anti-Israel bias for which the ABC is notorious.
Well, John, it is important to remember what led up to this airstrike as well, because it came, didn't it, just days after the International Court of Justice ordered Israel to halt its offensive in Rafah. The world was saying, don't do it. Do not do what you plan to do.
That's right. The pressure from those two international courts, of course, the International Criminal Court and the International Court of Justice, both of them are now cranking up their pressure. Of course, the International Criminal Court is now in the process right now of considering arrest warrants against three Hamas figures and Benjamin Netanyahu, the Prime Minister, and Yoav Gallant, the Defense Minister in Israel. Both those organizations have urged Israel to, you know, look at what it's doing. But also the United States. Don't forget that President Biden and Secretary of State Antony Blinken had very strongly cautioned against any sort of operation in Rafah. President Biden said to Israel quite openly and bluntly, publicly, you cannot go into Rafah unless you have a credible plan to protect civilians. Now, they've gone into Rafah and civilians are dying, as we're seeing, in large numbers. So it's this fascinating dynamic where Israel is now quite openly defying the cautions of groups like the ICJ and the United States.
So in this last audio clip, we hear John Lyons distorting what has been happening in Gaza. Israel has been successful in getting 1 million Palestinians in Rafah to move out so that Israel can get on with its business of destroying the last few Hamas battalions situated there. There have been some civilian casualties, but Lyons fails to point out that these are unavoidable in a conflict taking place in densely populated neighbourhoods where Hamas uses civilians as human shields.
In terms of ceasefire talks, the head of the CIA, William Burns, this is his full-time job at the moment, He is shuttling between Egypt and Qatar, Israel, the United States. He's on the case full time, trying to get Qatar to pressure Hamas, trying to get the Israelis and trying to get President Biden's involved in making phone calls himself to Prime Minister Netanyahu. They are all on the case 24 hours a day. But the big factor in this that is stopping anything really is the hardline right wing of the Netanyahu government. The Minister for Home Affairs, Itamar Ben-Gvir, and the Minister for Finance, Bezalel Smotrich. They can bring down the Netanyahu government tomorrow if they want to. And Netanyahu, and the Israeli media says this quite openly, has his eyes on those two and his political survival rather than what the White House is saying. But those two members, far-right members, one of them, the Minister for Finance, Bezalel Smotrich, he has actually said on the record Palestinians don't exist. They would rather that land was, to use their term, sort of cleansed. And so that's the political dynamic here. That's what people need to understand. That's the reason we haven't got a ceasefire, because Benjamin Netanyahu knows he doesn't have a job. If there's an immediate ceasefire and he hasn't killed the head of Hamas or done something dramatic, then there'll be inquiries from day one and his political survival is almost certainly over.
So we've just heard John Lyons twisting the narrative to say that Netanyahu and his right-wing coalition partners Ben-Gvir and Smotrich are the ones primarily responsible for preventing a ceasefire in Gaza, when we know that U.S. Secretary of State Blinken has laid the blame squarely onto the shoulders of Hamas.
A UN commission of inquiry has been investigating the actions of both Hamas and Israel between October 7 and December 31 last year, concluding that Israel's actions have constituted crimes against humanity because of the immense civilian losses inside Gaza, and that both Israel and Hamas have committed war crimes, including torture, murder or willful killing, outrages upon personal dignity and inhumane or cruel treatment. The commission says Israel did not respond to several requests for access into Israel and the occupied Palestinian territory. Israel has rejected the findings. Hamas didn't immediately respond.
So this ABC News report you just heard gives credence to a so-called UN Commission of Inquiry, independent, it says, failing to mention that this is effectively a permanent vendetta against Israel being conducted by three virulently anti-Israel activists. Navathan Pillay from South Africa, Milun Kotari from India, and Mr. Chris Sidoti from Australia. Chris Sidoti was a special guest at the Friends of Palestine Tasmania annual general meeting last month. This anti-Semitic committee has been deliberately set up to be a permanent weapon to be used by the UN to bash Israel.
In Rafah, we have already evacuated about a million non-involved residents, and despite our best efforts not to harm the non-involved, unfortunately, a tragic mishap happened last night. We are investigating the case. We will present the conclusions because this is our policy.
Originally, the Israeli army said it was a precise and targeted strike. Then the world, there was much outrage around the world, led by the French President Emmanuel Macron, who put out the strongest sort of note so far of any real leader. He just said, I'm outraged by this attack. Israel must stop its bombing immediately. And there were others as well. So with that sort of backlash, I think the Israelis felt real pressure and they had to react. And then the narrative became it was a tragic mistake. But it was the same pattern when they killed those seven aid workers from the World Food Kitchen, including the Australian, Zomi Frankum. Of course, originally it was, you know, they said it was a mistake, it was a terrible mistake. But in fact, if you looked at the facts of what happened there, the Israeli Air Force had three times hit that convoy over a space of 45 minutes or so. That's not a tragic mistake. That's a deliberate targeting. And yet again, even since that dreadful fire one, there's yet another 21 more people at least have been killed. Is that another tragic mistake? These are all legitimate questions, I think, that Israel will have to answer to the international community.
In the last clip I played, once again from the crooked mouth of the infamous John Lyons, we hear how Lyons conflates the word mishap with the word mistake. They are actually different. A mishap occurs while a mistake is made. Moreover, Lyons suggesting that Israel's bombing of the World Kitchen convoy was deliberate rather than a mistake is a reflection of his ingrained anti-Israel animus. My next guest is Michael Starr, the Diaspora Affairs Correspondent for the Jerusalem Post, where he covers global Jewish affairs, anti-Semitism and radical anti-Israel activities. Welcome to the show, Michael.
Thank you for having me, David.
Well, we met 5 years ago, so we know each other a little bit, but you've moved along a little bit since then. Now you're the correspondent for the Jerusalem Post. What's it like in this role you have now?
Well, the Jerusalem Post is a great platform. It strives to illuminate a lot of the confusion that I imagine yourself explaining to your listeners. There's a lot of stuff that's been going on in Israel in the last few years. I was previously the legal affairs correspondent. Thankfully, there was nothing connecting to the law or courts in Israel for the last year or so. So that's been completely quiet on that front. Gladly, obviously joking. We had the judicial reform, so that was interesting to cover. But it's been really amazing how this momentous event, which occurred, started with Yariv Levine, Justice Minister Yariv Levine's announcement of the judicial reform, how it's all melted away in a second when we were attacked on October 7th. We saw the news cycle completely transform, and I think you're well aware, and your listeners are well aware of the immense explosion of anti-Semitism that has occurred around the world, it is overwhelming. I wish I could cover every single anti-Semitic and anti-Israel incident that occurs around the world. But I can barely keep up with it.
So you're pretty busy. Now, the Jerusalem Post competes in English with other news outlets like Ynet News, The Times of Israel, and Haaretz. Do you have a sense of where the Jerusalem Post sits in this panorama of English-speaking media?
Well, the Jerusalem Post is a paper of note for the world about ongoings in Israel, about the ongoings in the Middle East, for Jews around the world, really. So it is a historic paper, and it will continue to be a historic paper. And despite all the lies and easily editable information that is out there on the internet, we maintain as a instrument of record for world events, and specifically world events for the Jewish people.
Yeah, you've got an important job being the Diaspora Affairs Correspondent for the Jerusalem Post. I guess you're pretty interested in what is going on in Australia right now, being part of the diaspora. And one of the latest articles about a pro-Palestinian disruption at a Jerry Seinfeld performance indicates this. So besides this, what else have you been focusing on in your role at the J-Post? What articles have you been writing that have been raising your attention?
Well, I think the change in tactics by anti-Israel activists and kind of the falling of the mask from their faces has interested a lot of people. I don't think people have largely, they still don't to a certain extent, but more so previously, they don't take these people very seriously. They hear support for Hamas, and they hear support for Hezbollah in the past, and they didn't take it very seriously. And they didn't take very seriously the animus that these people held for the countries that host them. And as we saw with the desecration of the Australian War Memorial recently, and as we've seen with the burning of American flags and chants for death in America, the United States, I think that my interest lies in kind of highlighting the rampant revolutionary spirits of these organizations and kind of the pragmatism that informs some of their anti-Israel activities. They see Israel, many of these groups, many of the ideological movements involved in anti-Israel activity, they see Israel as the handmaiden of U.S. empire. And they think, many of these groups think, that if they can topple the U.S., if they topple Israel, it'll cause U.S. empire to shudder as well.
So Israel's got a lot on its hands to deal with at the moment. But your focus is on what's going on outside of Israel, primarily. That's the case, isn't it?
It is. I do touch a little bit on Jewish affairs within the country, but unfortunately, there's just so much going on outside of country that needs attention. Often with these anti-Semitic incidents, they don't make it past the local or the national level. So people in America might not know that a war memorial or a politician's office were desecrated, were vandalized in Australia, and vice versa. In Australia, perhaps to a lesser extent, because we all hear about whatever happens in the U.S., but we might not hear about, you know, a synagogue being defaced and being having an arson attack on it in Vancouver, for example. So we really do want to bring these local level incidents, these incidents that are there, confined within national borders, internationally.
Well, there's one incident that's occurred today, or just last night, I draw your attention and the listeners to, which is a politician here who's part of the governing party, the Labor government, had his office vandalised. It's been deemed to be an arson attack because there were attempts to set it alight. He's a Jewish member of the parliament and would have no doubt been targeted for that reason, if not for his being part of a Labor government. The people here who are extremely pro-Palestinian are taking to task because they don't feel that this government here has done enough to back the Palestinian cause. So I don't know whether you've heard of that one. His name is Josh Burdens. And are you reliant on what comes out of the media here to know what to cover when you're writing stuff in the Jerusalem Post?
I think I'm in touch with people from the Australian Jewish community who tip me off to items that need to be covered. We also pay attention to what's going on with the police and what the Jewish community says publicly.
So if people want to give you tip-offs, do you want to share your contact details, or would you got any suggestions about how they might go about doing this?
Sure, you can message me on Twitter, or you can email me at star2rsjpost@gmail.com with any tips that you might have.
Okay, I'll share that in the on the Facebook page for this program as well for listeners who are keen to help. You've also served, I understand, in the IDF following October the 7th. Are you able to tell us a bit about what the experience was like for you?
Sure. I think for a lot of people, October 7th started with sirens. Sirens that, you know, startling enough, you know, rang out in Jerusalem, which isn't a common occurrence. And, you know, they most Israelis have an app on their phone which notifies them of rocket alerts. And in normal times, you'll get a drizzle of alerts. It'll be a light buzzing. And as soon as it came out as a steady hum on my phone, my bedside table as I woke up on Shabbat, I understood that something was not right, because everything had been calm before then, more or less. And for a sudden barrage to happen, it was very startling. So thankfully, I got my bag ready, my army bag ready, and our brigade commander took the initiative of calling up the troops, my reserve brigade commander. I don't believe he had been himself asked to do so. He took the initiative. So we were one of the first reserve brigades fully assembled. Now, it is to my regret that we didn't go straight down to the kibbutzim. For the first 2 days, we prepared our equipment and prepared ourselves for combat before we went down. For the first kibbutz we went to was Kisufim. There's still bodies strewn over the lawns. The stench of death, overwhelming. Anyone who's ever smelt it before would be able to identify it immediately. You know, there were, at this point, there were still people, there were still terrorists hiding throughout the kibbutzim in Israel. We'd still not secured these towns even a few days later, you know, there was a constant threat of mortar strike as well on our position. There were drones that hovered above our head that were clearly used to direct mortar fire. We had an engagement with an enemy combatant in one of the houses. Unfortunately, three of our number were injured. Thankfully, our brave company commander dispatched the enemy combatant. You know, from Kisufim, we went to Re'im, which is near the Nova Massacre Festival site. Sorry, the Nova Music Festival Massacre site. The bodies at that point had been largely removed, besides the carcass of a pet dog that was still there. But it was like a zombie apocalypse, walking and patrolling through that area and searching for survivors, searching for bodies, searching for more enemies. You know, we watched as the IDF prepared to enter Gaza. Helicopters dodged anti-aircraft fire from Gaza. Reem, we went to Kfar Aza as we helped secure the area, but also you know, oversaw the repair and cleaning of the Nachalo's base, which was still filled with blood and gore from that attack. And we were the first unit to, I guess, hold the position, hold Nachalo's base, since it was, I guess, for lack of a better term, conquered and reconquered by us. So we were the first to stay there, but that was short-lived. We soon got orders to enter Gaza. We entered near Khan Yunis secured a supply road there while we sought to eliminate three Hamas cells that were in kind of an ambush state in the area. Slowly, we destroyed the tunnels in the area, but unfortunately, there was an incident in which an IED was set off, and we lost two people from our company. Three other people from the brigade, or from the battalion rather, and we also had several people dear to us injured. We continued on We continue on fighting. The ambush teams were destroyed. The tunnels in the area were destroyed. And I would like to stress that these tunnels are everywhere. You can barely go 100 meters before you stumble across a tunnel. My sergeant almost fell inside a tunnel as we were doing searches. After that, after the area was secure, after the supply road had served its purpose, we moved deeper into the Khan Yunis metropolitan area, where we helped secure a site where digs were going on, we released in January.
Well, that's an experience I'm sure that you're never going to forget, Michael. I was going to ask you, maybe in 1 minute we have left, can you just tell me what you feel is the mood in the country right now in Israel regarding the whole situation with Israel potentially on a war footing with Hezbollah?
Well, I think that people are tense about the Hezbollah situation. We're caught in a certain level of limbo in which we want to finish what's going on in Gaza. And at the same time, because we don't have the munitions we need, we're stuck allowing the North to absorb attacks from Hezbollah while we try to finish the job in the South.
Well, I thank you very much for speaking with me today, and I'm glad that we have been able to talk to you again, meet up with you, even if it's only in this fashion. I'll hopefully catch up with you again when I get to Israel. But I thank you very much for speaking with me today on the Israel Connection. Michael, much appreciated. Good to talk.
Thank you.
So you've just heard Michael Starr, the Diaspora Affairs Correspondent for the Jerusalem Post, where he covers global Jewish affairs, anti-Semitism and radical anti-Israel activities. Please consider supporting what we do here at JA by becoming a member. Just go to the JA website to join, and it only costs $50 per annum and will keep us broadcasting for your benefit 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Until next week, it's goodbye from the Israel Connection.